Bitchiyah. By his will. Without being forced by anyone. Ishaham. The supreme controller. Shijati. Creates. Idam.
This material world.
Avyayaha.
Remaining as he is.
Not having lost his own existence.
Because of having created
so many material manifestations.
Yaha.
Who?
Eva.
Indeed.
Rakshati.
Maintains.
Avalumbhati.
Annihilates.
Cha.
Also.
Yaha.
Who?
Tashav.
Of him.
Avalaha.
O poor women.
Kridanam.
The plain.
Ahu.
They say.
Ishitahu.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Chara acharam.
Moving and not moving.
Migraha.
In destruction.
Sangrahe.
Or in protection.
Prabhu.
Fully able.
Translation.
The boy addressed the women.
Oh, weak women.
Only by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never diminished, is the entire world created, maintained, and again annihilated. This is the verdict of the Vedic knowledge. This material creation, consisting of the moving and non-moving, is exactly like his plaything. Being the Supreme Lord, he is completely competent to destroy and protect. You repeat, the boy addressed the women.
Oh, weak women.
Only by the will
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
who is never diminished,
is the entire world created,
maintained and again annihilated.
This is the verdict of the Vedic knowledge.
This material creation, consisting of the moving and non-moving, is exactly like his plaything.
Being the Supreme Lord,
he is completely competent
to destroy and protect.
So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki. In this regard, the queens might argue, if our husband was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead when in the womb, why has he not been given protection now? To this question, the answer is,
Ya ichye sha, shitatiyam abhiyo yaiva rakshat yavalum pate cha yaha.
One cannot argue with the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is always free, and therefore he can protect and can also annihilate. He is not our order carrier. Whatever he likes, he will do. Therefore, he is the Supreme Lord. The Lord does not create this material world at anyone's request. And therefore, he can annihilate everything merely by his will. That is his supremacy. If one argues, why does he act in this way? The answer is that he can do so because he is supreme. No one can question his activities. If one argues, what is the purpose of this sinful creation and annihilation? The answer is that to prove his omnipotence, he can do anything and no one can question him. If he were answerable to us concerning why he does something and why he does not, his supremacy would be curtailed. So, Yaityesha Shujati Namalgyo Yaiva Rakshat Yavalumpate Jaya Atashyabalakridanamahurishitosh Characharam nigraha sangrahe prabhu. So, Om Gnat Timrandasha Gnanjana Shlakaya Chakshur Nidhitam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, here Hiranyakashipu is utilizing one of the techniques in teaching. It's a very effective technique in teaching, to tell a story to illustrate a particular point. Many times, just out-and-out philosophy is not going to impress anybody or make anyone change. So you just tell a story. And Bhagavatam is full of different stories told in this way, like the Paranjana story. You know, once there was a king, O king, he was just like you. You know, Paranjana, of course, means every man. And it's a lot easier for people to digest things and understand things when you tell a story. So in this particular story, of course, Hiranyakashipu is demonstrating that he has Vedic knowledge, and he actually even believes in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is quite interesting. And he is talking about some of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's qualities that are mentioned here. Of course, one of the things is avyayaha, remaining as he is, not having lost his own existence because of having created so many material manifestations. Of course, that's very similar to the Ishvarupanishad verse, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and even though he manifests all these perfect and complete manifestations, he remains perfect and complete. He doesn't become diminished in the least. So that's one of the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead mentioned by Hiranyakashipu. Another quality is his independence. You know, he can do anything that's swarat. He can do anything, anytime he wants, and nobody can question. Of course, they may question, but in a sense, they don't have the right to accuse him or think they know why he's doing it. I mean, you can always question, obviously. You know, I say, why does he do that? But we can't understand. And then that's another quality. Another quality is aptakama, that he can do anything. That is, his desires are fulfilled. He can do anything simply by wishing it to happen. So these various qualities of God are part of theism, not atheism. However, questions arise about the goodness of God. That's really what the question being raised here in the purport. That the goodness of God, if God is supposed to protect, if God is good, then why does he not protect, and why does he allow evil things to happen? And in theology, that's called the question of theodicy. You know, the justice of God. Okay, accepting God is great, accepting God is all-powerful, accepting he's independent, he doesn't get diminished by his creation of the material world. So basically, why is he acting so cruelly in spite of all this? And that's really what Prabhupada is talking about here, that the king was given protection when he's in the womb and he's not given protection later on. And that's shocking in one sense, but it's even more shocking when we see that with devotees. I mean, it's the king, you know, it's not said that he chants 16 rounds a day or anything like that, or has a bona fide spiritual master in this particular story, or is a surrendered soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's it's understandable. You know, he has his karma. We can explain that very easily, right? That's my karma. And karma has a purpose. Karma's purpose is to teach us to behave ourselves. Just like I was speaking to someone about discipline in schools. Because nowadays there's not much discipline in the schools anymore. So I was speaking to someone who came from India, how he was disciplined when he was young. And I mean, not super harsh discipline, but he was, it's actually quite interesting. One time he was beaten on his hand with a ruler, and he behaved himself after that. Another time, his whole class made fun of a teacher who couldn't teach Bengali properly because the teacher had come from the jungle. Yeah, the jungle, but from the village. He came from the village and didn't speak Bengali properly, and therefore the class was laughing and making fun of him. So the whole class was punished. What they had to do is, in India, it's actually quite an interesting punishment that they had. They had to like hold their ears. Anyone seen that before? Was there Rishikesh has seen that? And that they stoop down like that, you know, they have to sit on their haunches. Does everyone understand what haunches are? Anyway. And the whole class had to do that for like 8 hours. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, God. What's that? No, don't do that here. And he was appreciating that. I mean, I wouldn't appreciate it, but anyway. He was appreciating that. He said, you know, it was some discipline like that. I'm not saying that we should do that. That's not really what I'm saying. But there, you know, he was appreciating that, and we were talking about modern India, which is getting pretty much the same as America, where they can't discipline the kids at all. In America, they can't even say any, you know, harsh words to the kids. You know, you act like a rascal or something like that, or you did something wrong, or else the parents will actually complain. And so nowadays, it's, you know, the teacher really has to be on his toes. And as far as this discipline is concerned, I'm not saying that we should harshly discipline people. So, but the discipline had a place. So this particular devotee is very dedicated, very disciplined, works very hard, has all sorts of good qualities. I can see whatever he experienced when he was young, and really, you know, helped him later on in life because he was trained up. So there has to be some discipline. I'm not saying harsh discipline, I'm not saying heavy discipline, but sometimes there has to be discipline in order to train someone up. So karma is something like that. It's pretty heavy discipline, especially when you get going with the Yamadutas. That's one of the heaviest types of discipline you can get. But it's to train you up that you should not do certain things, like eating meat, you should not do certain things like hurt other people. You know, there's punishments that are supposed to be there. I mean, even in the Vedic system, you have very heavy punishments that for robbers. I'm not going to get into it because it's similar to something else being discussed in the news right now. But anyways, a very, very heavy punishment if someone robs, if someone's a child abuser, they're supposed to basically walk to the sun holding a particular part of their body that's been cut off in their hands, and then die. So the Vedas do have this heavy type of punishment there in this lifetime and also karmically. So it does have a particular purpose. But the question arises in my mind in regard to this is, I understand that in regard to vikarmas, but why do us devotees, of course I'm not a devotee, but anyway, why do devotees have to experience these sorts of things? You know, because Krishna's supposed to be protecting devotees. I mean, if you look at Prabhupada's life, Prabhupada was gored by a bull, right? You know the story? No. Prabhupada was preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, he wasn't like us doing all sorts of nonsense, going to the movies or whatever. But Prabhupada was preaching Krishna consciousness, and he was gored by a bull. You know, what happened to Krishna's protection? And reflecting on the Mahabharata, you have the Pandavas' sons, you know, these five sons, actually six sons, including Abhimanyu, who were killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? And you have Kunti, and you have Draupadi completely, you know, I mean, she must have been a mess after the Battle of Kurukshetra, having her sons killed like that. So you're just thinking, you know, what is happening with God? Is he just like you see the Roman gods? You know, there was the depiction of the Roman or the Greek gods. They're just like moving everybody. I've never seen a film when I was young. They just move everybody on a chessboard. I mean, just like for example, sometimes I play chess. You know, it's one of the things I do to keep my mind going, especially when I play with children. It helps me with my sense of prestige. Anyway, I play with Ishvara, and I beat him, and it makes me feel real good. But then I play chess, and then I sacrifice certain items on the chessboard, right? Isn't that how you play chess? So I may sacrifice a pawn just because I have this strategy. I want to win. You know, obviously I want to put his particular king in checkmate. Everyone knows what checkmate is? That means when you're playing chess, you corner the king and he can't move and you win. So I'm sacrificing. Sometimes I sacrifice a knight even. Sometimes I sacrifice a pawn. I never sacrifice my queen. But I sacrifice all these different items on the chessboard. So is God just like that, trying to, you know, fool around with us like some Greek god? Is like playing chess, you know, this is quite an interesting game. Let's sacrifice Guru Krishna Maharaj, you know, with this purpose. Is he just like that? And so obviously he's not. I mean, because one of the qualities of God, he's compassionate. You know, hey Krishna, Karana Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namostute. Oh Krishna, Karana Sindhu. He's an ocean of mercy, and especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kripam Bodhi Yathvam, Aham Prabhadye. Like Sarvabhama Bhattacharya prayed, what is it? Vairagya Vijaya Nijivakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Apurana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shavira Kripam Bhudi Rash Yastamaham Prapadi. I surrender to Lord Chaitanya, who's like an ocean. Kripam Bhudi Yastamaham Prapadi, who is an ocean of compassion, an ocean of mercy. So why does Krishna do this to us? I mean, why did Prabhupada have this going to the bull? Or so many other issues, too, heart attacks and things like that. And the answer is that whatever Krishna does, and this may be a heavy answer, whatever Krishna does is to bring us closer to him. And it may seem like it's cruel, unusual punishment, like, you know, one of the... In the Constitution, it says you're not allowed to have cruel and unusual punishment. It may seem like cruel and unusual punishment, but Krishna has an overall perspective. In other words, he has 20/20 hindsight, 20/20 foresight, and 20/20 now sight. I don't know what 20/20 sight now. So he knows, like long term, what's best for you. And also, let's say a pure devotee, what's best for the preaching mission? Like someone's phone. Like Krishna took away everything from Prabhupada in the Jhansi program. Krishna knew what was best for the preaching mission. Krishna knew what is best for that particular individual. So that's the faith we have in Krishna. Because some devotees actually, 2 days ago, were talking to me how they were praying to Krishna to protect them, and Krishna didn't protect them in the way that they wanted Krishna to protect them. Because we have a particular concept of how we want Krishna to protect us, but Krishna has another concept of how he will protect us in light of bringing us back to home, back to Godhead, ASAP, as soon as possible. So therefore, there's difficulties. And of course you have Queen Kunti, who ultimately realizes that, and she prays for more difficulties. However, it is a test from Krishna, because when these things happen, there's a tendency, and I've seen that happen with many devotees, there's a tendency to lose faith, to actually think, you know, Krishna, is he there? If he was there, why isn't he listening to me? Just like Prabhupada gave the example of World War II, this wasn't about devotees, but it was about the Germans and the Allies. And Prabhupada said the Germans, the ladies were going to the church every day. I guess it was a Lutheran church in Germany. So they were going to the church every day. Please let our husbands come back. And then the other side, that's the Allies, that's us, the ladies on the Allied side, they were praying, please let our husbands come back. And many of the husbands didn't come back on both sides, of course. And so Prabhupada actually at one point said jokingly, you know, Krishna was like confused, you know, he didn't know what to do. Because he was getting prayers from both sides. It's just like a conflict situation, like two devotees come to me and say, I want this. Another devotee says, I want that. And so, you know, it's called approach. You know, that's which is the source. It's a type of conflict. It's a source of many different problems in this world, conflicts. So God is, as Prabhupada said, God didn't know what to do. But that Prabhupada was speaking facetiously, of course. He knew exactly what to do, and that was a question of karma. But Prabhupada said that after World War II, many Germans lost faith in God. And you see that in Germany and in a lot of Europe, they're not as religious as America. I mean, they have a state religion, I understand that. In many religions, there's a state religion, and the government actually pays to maintain a particular state religion. Fortunately, in one country, like this country of Hungary, we've gotten recognized as one of the state religions. We're number three, which is interesting, in Hungary. We get 0.5% of people's taxes who elect to have their taxes go to us, and the government pays us €1 million a year. That's pretty good, isn't it? Because also in Europe, you don't have that strict separation, most countries, the strict separation between church and state like we have in America. In America, there's strict rules that the government really can't give $1 million to the Hare Krishna movement. It can give money to some NGO or something like that, you know, some charitable organization, but not to the Hare Krishna movement or to any other religion directly. So many other religions, they register NGOs in order to have, even in our temple in Seattle, they've registered an NGO to get matching grants and everything like that from the government. You know, Food for Life or something like that from the government. But in any case, I mean, in Europe, pretty much people, I mean, if you ask people, they're not really that much into God, that much in most, maybe Spain is different, but in most of the other countries, no. In Spain, what? They're atheists too. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been in Spain. But the countries I've visited, you know, Denmark, all the Scandinavian countries, you know, G-O-D is just as good as a four-letter word in English. You definitely don't want to mention him, that word. So people lose faith. And sometimes we even see devotees lose faith because Krishna just didn't do things the way they wanted. And Krishna doesn't do things the way we want. He's not an order supplier, as Prabhupada mentions here. But he's compassionate to us in bringing us closer to him. So that is actually the teleological point. I mean, if one understands that whatever Krishna does in this world, whether it's, you know, this cruelty or whatever, is to bring the spirit souls closer, because that's the purpose of the whole material world. Material world has a purpose. It's to bring spirit souls so they can have a loving relationship with him. And sometimes that requires very severe discipline, even amongst devotees. And look at, I mean, another example I'm thinking of is Dharma the Bull, who's obviously a devotee of Krishna. I mean, having his legs cut off by the personality of Kali, isn't it? And Dharma the Bull's not getting angry. You know, he's not even getting angry at Kali. He's just understanding this is the Lord's plan. So basically, when things happen to us, and things will happen to us, Hare Krishna, I'm not predicting anything in particular. Or waiting for something to happen to me today. God forbid. What do they say? Knock on wood? That actually came from, that's a Christian saying, you know, like the cross, like that. That's where the wood came from. You know, many devotees do that without even understanding. They say, knock on wood! You know, to try to prevent something from happening. But, you know, you're not Christian, so you should, at least if you're a Jewish background, you don't need to do that. So, basically, we should just try to see Krishna's hand behind everything that happens to us that's not our doing. And on the other hand, certain things are our doing and our fault and our foolishness. Like Prabhupada said, when the devotees died because they weren't sleeping enough, driving a car and they had an accident, he said it wasn't Krishna's doing, it was their doing because they were foolish. So, you know, if we act foolishly, we get the blame for it. Don't blame Krishna. But in any case, when things happen beyond our control, and, you know, whether it's disease, and, you know, just like last night I was reading about Jamuna passing away through cancer, or, you know, other great devotees having all these difficulties, then, and ourselves, just understand it's Krishna. And try to take shelter of Krishna's names in those circumstances, because that's ultimately the point. Yashaham anagrinami hurishye tadhanam chunat. For those who I especially favor, Krishna says, of course, many of us will say, I hope Krishna doesn't favor me too much. You know, let him favor me a little bit, not especially favor. Then I take away things. So basically, they'd have to take shelter of Krishna's names. Prabhupada even translates that verse as their friends and relatives reject them. You know, can you imagine that? That's painful. I mean, in India it's painful. In America it's not so painful. Okay. Friends and relatives just say, the hell with you. Okay, fine, Mom. So, but in India the family is very tight. So they're like it happened with Prabhupada. You know, his wife, you know, just like basically treated him and, you know, rejected him for all intents and purposes. She did. And she went back to live with her father. You know, it's painful. These things are very painful when they happen, when it happens. You know, painful in the heart when someone speaks some harsh words. That's even more painful than physical pain. So we just have to understand the importance of just taking shelter of Krishna's names in all circumstances, but especially when the things get very bad in this world for us personally. And once we take shelter of Krishna's names, then the miseries we see, they're not so miserable at that particular point. That is the protection that Krishna gives us. The protection is in his holy names. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam, right? Krishna, save me! Oh, Krishna, Rakshamam, protect me. The word Raksha is protect. Prabhupada translates it a little bit different here, anyway. So that's the message for today. And so Hiranyakashipu was preaching very, very nicely in this particular verse. We very much appreciate his devotional sentiments. So any questions or comments?
Yeah, I have two questions.
Yeah.
What's NGO?
NGO is non-governmental organization. I mean, it's like a charitable organization. Let's say we have Food for Life. Food for Life, which has no religious overtones to it. You know, helping people. Vegetarian, you know, you can be vegetarian. You can have certain aspects of the Krishna conscious philosophy in there without being overtly religious. You know, or UNICEF. You know, UNICEF, you've heard about that before? That means non-governmental organization, basically it's helping people. And at least in America, it can't have any connection, overt connection with a religion.
So our temple is
not? No, our temple is no. Our temple is not an NGO. Our temple is a religious organization. We may in the future, like, register an NGO to take advantage of, you know, charitable activities, Food for Life. Food for Life is an NGO, and we get a lot of... In Europe, it's interesting, the religions get money from the government, too. I was working with one of our devotees, he's a good friend of mine in Slovenia, his name is Mukunda, and he's very expert in applying for grants to the European Union. And he's gotten devotees' grants to go for a GDC meeting. When they said an education, as long as they have an educational aspect to the GDC meeting. He was trying to get me a grant to go to Slovenia to teach about health, but it just didn't go through. But many of the religious organizations, Radhadesh has gotten some grants. They got grants that enabled them to do Rath Yatra, which is interesting. Three or four Rath Yatras were actually financed by the European Union. And the reason that was there, they presented it as a cultural thing. They didn't present it, even though it was a religious organization they gave money to, it was a cultural, you know, Lord Jagannath, he's very cultural. Yeah, Jagannath, you know, his culture represents India. We're trying to present Indian culture. Yeah.
I was wondering, you gave that example of what does it really mean?
It has to do something with Jesus Christ, the cross, you know, like taking shelter of Jesus Christ. And maybe a Christian can further explain it. But it was explained to me that expression became prominent because Jesus Christ was on the cross, which was made of wood. So knock on wood. That's where, I mean, we have all these expressions and superstitions. Like in India, they have this superstition that if you look at someone with one eye, you're cursing them. One time I was looking at one of my godbrothers with one eye. And, you know, just because I had a twitch or something in the eye. And he started to shake, you know, he's from India. He said, Maharaj, don't curse me. And I said, what? He said, you're looking at me with one eye. And because I'm not really into these superstitious things, I even deliberately did it. I closed the eye like that. And he got even more nervous. So it wasn't a curse. I mean, we have all these different superstitions, things we do, sayings, that really are not effective at all. You know, just like Friday the 13th, isn't it? Friday the 13th, you're supposed to be unlucky. I've never experienced any bad luck on Friday the 13th. Some of my best days have been Friday the 13th. So...
And I was just going to mention... You brought this up in the class, which is a very good point. But just to elaborate, these different calamities that come upon the pure devotees, it's also an opportunity for the Christian
to glorify.
Show us how we should react when it comes our way.
Yeah.
That they're real persons. Like,
yeah, and to glorify the pure devotee, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
it's just like when you watch a soccer game. If there's no opposition, Prabhupada said, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory?
Game's no fun if it's good.
Yeah, the game's no fun. You know, it's just like when I used to wrestle in gym, I surrendered to the other party immediately because I didn't like wrestling. And I plunged gym. And the other person had no fun. Okay, on that happy note... Expect the worst in the material world.